Are you listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other platform where you can leave a rate or review? Do you like what we're doing? If the answer to all of that is yes, please consider quickly giving us a 5-star rate. And if you wouldn't mind leaving us a nice review, we greatly appreciate that as well. Okay, let's do this.
Hello, welcome to the Ghosts of Harrenhal. My name's Simon.
And I'm McKelly.
Thank you for joining us for episode 109 of our chapter-by-chapter book review of A Song of Ice and Fire by George Martin. Today we'll be discussing chapter 35 of A Clash of Kings, that's Bran 5.
And the plan is to chat about the chapter and try not to spoil any future plot points for you, and hopefully provide you with some entertainment along the way.
We'll summarise what happened, discuss our thoughts on it, provide some useful background, compare it to the television show, indulge in a little pedantry, and cover some relevant news and listener correspondence. Be sure to check out the show notes, they'll provide you some additional information that will be particularly handy if you're not reading along. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing better now that I can see that you are alive and well.
I've had a very busy week and I've not been able. I've been ghosting McKelly all week, including work chats, which are the ones you can normally reliably
right.
catch me on. But
you know, I
haven't read. I still haven't read what you wrote to me on my work chat.
You didn't
know you pinged me. I saw it out the corner of my eye, and I was like, I should get back to that at some point. But I never did read it. So
you ghosting me isn't that unusual.
No, true.
When I started to get alarmed is when it was 8 consecutive days of no communication of any kind with you. I was starting to get a little. I said to Stacey, I was like, I feel like I should probably contact Carson and make sure that everything's okay.
That's always a safe bet. It will make her annoyed with me, though, because she gets annoyed that I do that. So be warned.
Well, all's well that ends well.
Actually believe I'm dead before you contact Carson. Because okay? If I'm not, I will be.
So how are you doing?
So I'm good. I was listening to an old episode the other day, and it was one where I had two toilet stories.
Oh,
in
yes.
Good succession.
Right.
Remember that one?
Yeah.
I don't remember which episode it was, but I thought I'd give the listeners an update. But only eagle-eyed listeners would have noticed, because the story that I'm about to update was the story that was delayed until after the end of the show. If you remember,
yes.
We ran long that show. So I said, I've got two toilet stories, and I told one, and then we went into the rest of the thing. And then in the end credits, you said, hang around, listeners, for Simon's second toilet story.
Okay, right. Only our most dedicated listeners will have a clue what you're talking
exactly.
about.
Exactly. In fact, funnily enough, I listened to that episode, and when it got to the end, I just jumped to the next episode. And then, I don't know what reminded me, I was like, wait a minute, I thought I told a story about the toilet. And I went back and listened and I realized what had happened. I was like, oh, it's on the end there. Which I knew already because I'd already listened to it once, but right. I'd forgotten in the intervening time. But so the story was that the toilet leaked and then self-healed.
Right.
You remember?
That's which is fantastic when that happens.
Exactly. Fantastic and also unprecedented, surely, in
right.
the history of leaks.
Rarely do plumbing issues self-heal.
Right. But you know what? It's still good. I still haven't done anything to the toilet since that day. And remember, it leaked a bucket full in one night. And then I turned a few taps and hoped for the best. And it just self-corrected. And it's still going strong. And I'm desperate to know if anyone can think of how this could be. How it could go from significant troublesome leak to it's fine.
That's beyond my plumbing knowledge, that's for sure.
Yeah,
that's it's a mystery.
It does seem rather magical, I have to say.
It's as magical as my missing Baratheon sock for a year and a half, only to show up in the dryer out of the blue. Things happen.
When you told me that, did I mention that I'd once heard that dryers have areas where things can get into? I don't know if that is true in America, but I heard this in England, that washers and dryers have zones where things can get stuck, and usually they don't come back from those zones. They're outside the drum. But there is ingress and outgress, and it's conceivable one could come back in. So it's pretty unlikely, but
yeah, interesting. Maybe that's what happened. I don't know how else.
You can imagine, or let's imagine there's a sort of a crack between the drum and sort of like the casing of the thing.
Right.
Well, once it's fallen out of the drum, it's
How's it get back
taken
in?
Right? It away from the drum. Yeah, exactly. So the fact it came back, the fact that things go missing in the dryer is not inconceivable.
Right.
But the fact that something came back is genuinely mystifying.
Yes, it is.
So we're rehashing old stories.
Yes.
This is how uneventful our lives are.
I do have a news story for you real quick.
Do tell.
I was talking to a family member of mine. I'm not going to say which family member because I don't want to spread their business to the masses of the world here. But I was talking to a family member, and I was telling them about something that Molly and I are featured in a local magazine article on raising a young athlete. And so I was just mentioning that there's a 2-page wide picture of us I wasn't expecting. I was just telling said family member about that, and said family member said, "Oh man, nothing interesting ever happens to me. Although I did just win $50,000 in a scratch-off ticket." I was like, "Are you serious? I thought said family member was joking."
Did you say, "Don't interrupt, this is a local magazine"?
Right.
2-page spread.
2 pages. I want to hear about your $50,000 windfall.
That's weird, because that is so like, I've told you before about my family and our family calls, where people say what they've done that week, and then at the end of the conversation, they're like, "Oh, I didn't do anything this week." And then they come up with something magical that happened
right.
that week.
I thought of your family calls when... He said family member was like, "Oh yeah, I wish anything cool happened to me. Oh, by the way, I won $50,000 in a scratch-off ticket."
I suppose if he had significant gambling debts and he paid them off, then yeah. It probably didn't count for much.
Yes,
but still, right. You're out of that.
Hey, yeah, get
the
that off your back.
The leg breakers are going to let you off.
Anyway, I thought that was pretty neat.
Yeah.
So.
All right, well... Let's get down to business. How did we leave Bran Stark?
How did we leave
Last Bran we saw of Brandon, he was learning about Jojen Reed's green dreams and getting the idea that Jojen felt something bad was coming to Winterfell. He was also getting irked that the Reed boy was prying into his own, Bran's, dreams. He then talked to Maester Luwin, who explained that there's no magic left in the world. Finally, Meera Reed told him of another dream Jojen had had, where Luwin served Bran good meat and the Walders Frey bad meat, but yet they liked their meat better than he liked his. Michele, why don't we give them the summary of this one?
Curious.
I'll mention that we were a little bit more verbose in the what happened last time we saw Bran, because that last little bit is going to be significant as we read on. Which is, you know what's funny? When I read the chapter, I read it through. Totally missed it. It was only on the second run through I was like, "Oh wait, that's a hark back to something that happened previously. I get it now."
That's why you read it more than once, I guess.
Exactly.
And that's why people listen to our show, because we read the chapter over and over and over again. So here's what happened in this chapter. Bran is summoned to Maester Luwin's turret, and when he arrives via a huffing and puffing ale belly, Rickon and the Frey boys are already there. Luwin tells them of Robb's great victory in the West against Sir Stafford Lannister. Bran's glad to hear it, but as it doesn't mean Robb is returning to Winterfell, he can't shake the memory of Asha's words that Robb is marching the wrong way. Luwin has sad news for the Freys. Their uncle and heir to the twins, Sir Stevron Frey, was killed during the battle at Oxcross. The Frey boys are hardly broken up about it. Stevron was old, and his death bumps them both up in the line of succession.
Bran realizes that they like their dished out news better than he did. Now unsettled, Bran asks to leave. This time it's Osha who takes him to his room. On the way, he asks her about mystical creatures north of the wall. She knows of giants, children of the forest, and others, but never heard of a three-eyed crow. Soon after arriving in his room, the Reed siblings drop in. Bran tells Jojen that it wasn't food like he dreamed, but that Luwin served up news to him and to the Freys that they liked better, just like Jojen had dreamed.
Now believing in Jojen's claim of green dreams, he asks what bad thing Jojen dreamed is coming to Winterfell. Jojen says it's the sea, that the seawater will flow over the walls of Winterfell and drown those inside. In the dream, he specifically saw Mickon, Septon Chale, and Alebelly drown. Jojen then asks Bran about his dreams, Bran tells of the wolf dreams as well as the three-eyed crow dreams that often feature the weirwood calling his name. But he says it's the falling dreams that trouble him the most.
Jojun calls him a warg and warns him that if others find out what he is, they might hate him and even possibly kill him. Bran argues that they're only dreams, but Jojun says that they're more. It's only when he sleeps that his third eye opens and his soul searches for its other half. If he can learn to open his third eye, he'll see past, present, and future.
Bran does his best to warn the others of their drowning fate, but Mikkon thinks it's funny. Septon Shale puts his life in the god's hands, and Elbelly misses the point entirely and avoids bath time until he's so ripe his colleagues dunk him in water and scrub him clean.
A few days later, Sir Roderick returns with a prisoner in tow. It's a man named Reek, who had been an accomplice of Roose Bolton's bastard when he, Bolton, forced Lady Donella Hornwood into marriage and made claims on her lands. Bran learns of Lady Donella's terrible fate. After consummating the marriage, the Bolton bastard locked her in a room and forgot about her. Sir Roderick found her dead, having eaten off her fingers. Sir Roderick hunted down the bastard and killed him and captured his accomplice Reek.
Sir Roderick is concerned about the legitimacy of the marriage. The bastard took care to make sure all the appropriate steps were taken. They were married before a Septon, consummated it, and he forced her to name him heir in writing with her seal. With so much land at stake, Roderick can only hope Roose Bolton will hear of the horrible crimes his son committed and relinquish any claims made. And in the meantime, Manderly knights and Bolton men continue to fight each other.
Bran and Maester Luwin fill Roderick in on the happenings around Winterfell. Bran tells him of the men who he believes will drown, and Luwin explains about Jojen and his belief that he sees the future in his dreams. Luwin also informs him there's been trouble along the stony shore. Men in longships have been harassing the coastal villages, plundering, raping, and burning. Roderick has a simple answer. If he has to go deal with the raiders, he won't take Aelbelly with him. Problem solved.
Sounds good to me. Bran sees the merit in the plan, but later, when he tells it to the Reeds, only Mira is hopeful. Mr. Sunshine, Jojen, says it won't matter. Once he's dreamed it, there's no changing it. This angers Mira. She thinks Aelbelly should fight, and so should Bran. And Bran's like, me? What's this now?
Seems Jojen has also dreamed of Bran and Rickon's death. Their dead bodies lie at this Reek fellow's feet, and he's carving the skin off their faces. Bran says he'll flee to Greywater Watch or anywhere, but Jojen says it won't matter. Green dreams don't lie. Mm. So, pretty miserable, this one.
Yeah, that Jojen, he's a bit of a wet blanket.
Well, yeah, but you know what? If you've had like 50 dreams in a row and they've all come true exactly as dreamt, what's the point telling someone, oh, I dreamed it, it might not happen? You're going to tell him it's going to happen, you know?
Yeah, the way he delivered that news to a 9-year-old boy, I was like, just yeah. Say you're dead. You don't, if they're already dead, you don't have to mention that their faces are being carved off, you know?
But then again, I'm pretty sure I'm going to say these words again later on in the episode, but the dreams are still open to interpretation.
Yes.
It's hard to imagine a good interpretation of Reek's carving the faces off Bran and Rickon, but the meat one turned out to be news.
Yes, I had that same thought. And yes, I think that will probably come up later as well. But
yeah. So Jojen's dream that Mira mentioned came true. Last Bran chapter ended with him saying that Luwin is right. There is no magic. But then Mira told him of the additional dream that Luwin first served Bran the choice morsels of meat, and then he served the Freys the lesser morsels of meat, but they seemed to like theirs better.
Right.
Perfect analogy to the news that just arrived.
Right.
The news that came to Bran was, Rob's won a great battle. Should have been happy to hear it, but he's still disconcerted by what Osha told him, that Rob's gone in the wrong direction.
Right.
The Freys hear that their uncle's been killed. And I mean, to be fair to the Freys, they're not like giddy and happy that they've moved up in the chain of succession. They're just pretty disinterested. You know, they're right. like, he was old, we don't care. And then they just start to banter about the chain of succession. Not really, they're not really happy, but they do appear to be a lot more sanguine with the news that they received than Bran is with the news he received.
So. Yes. And Bran got that from Osha, that your brother's marching in the wrong way. That was back when the Bannermen were all arriving at Winterfell, and Bran, when OSHA told him that, he said he'd talk to Rob about it, but he never got a chance before Rob rode out. So
yeah,
that's what that was all about, in case you had forgotten. But yeah, so the boys, the Frey boys, start a debate about who's next. And I think it's Little Walter says, is Emin next? And, or, you know, next in line to be heir? And Big Walter says no.
Because Emin is the second son of...
Lord Walter
Frey. Right. So you might think that that's where it goes, from first son to second son. But then
he's probably in his late 50s, early 60s as well. Right. So you'd think he would be next in line. But actually, it's Stevron's kids that come before Emin. So now the true heir is Ryman Frey, and he's also in the West with Rob. We've not heard much mention of Ryman yet, but actually Jorah Mormont mentioned him as one of the men he beat in the tourney at Lannisport when he won the jousting and asked for Lady Lyanna Hightower's hand in marriage.
I will say in passing, it's probably good news for Ryman Frey that we haven't heard of him till now, because pretty much all we've heard of Freys is their deaths. Death or capture. That's what we hear about Freys, basically. So he's better off keeping a low profile.
Right.
I was going to say something. Oh, yes, this has parallels to the British royal family, because the British royal family, if you think about it, you might... one time in my life, the succession after Elizabeth was Charles and then Andrew and then Edward.
Right.
But now it's Charles and then William.
Yeah.
And then whatever William's
George,
child is called.
I think.
Is George, that his maybe? Yeah, something son? Like that. I don't know.
Something like that.
I've really lost the thread on that one, but they've become very much like the phrase in my mind.
They're all over the map here.
The good news is that's pushed Andrew down the list. And let's be honest, if you're British, you're a little bit embarrassed about the possibility of Andrew getting anywhere near the throne.
I do not know about that, but...
Oh, you don't? Well, let me just clue you in with two words. Jeffrey Epstein.
Oh, yes, I think I did know about this. Okay.
Yes. And it's coincidental, actually, because there's sort of like... There's a couple of extradition things going on between England and America. The FBI would love to get Prince Andrew to come and interview with them, and Prince Andrew has decided not to put the USA on his vacation list anytime soon. And simultaneously, an American diplomat's wife killed a pedestrian or a cyclist in England. She was driving on the wrong side of the road. Uh-huh. It happens. We all understand it happens. But she claimed diplomatic immunity and fled the country. Britain's very unhappy about that. So I'm thinking at some point there's going to be an exchange of prisoners, basically.
Oh, yes, right. Well,
she'll come over here and face the music. And you can have Prince Andrew.
Well, they could just get maybe Tyrion to negotiate a prisoner exchange or something. Well, we actually got news here a little bit about Rob's victory in the West, because Lewin says it's not just a victory at Oxcross, which is what we were told in the last Sansa chapter, is that, he won this victory at Oxcross. But it's mentioned here that he's taken several castles, and that the letter that Lewin is giving them the news from was actually sent from Ashmark, which is the seat of House Marbrand, which is a pretty important house in the West.
Oh, yeah.
We've actually met Adam Marbrand. He's one of the sons of the Lord Marbrand. We met him. He was with Tywin when Tyrion spent time with Tywin, and he actually commanded the right wing of Tywin's force at the Battle on the Green Fork.
The wing that wasn't supposed to collapse and die.
Right, that was Tyrion's side.
Right.
And Gregor's.
Yeah, actually, listening back, I think that might have been the episode with the toilet story. What's interesting about that is that I can understand him putting Tyrion out there to die, but putting his chief henchman, Gregor Clegane, out there to die? Well, I don't think we ever commented on that, but as I listened, I was like, that's a little bit weird. Maybe you just thought, the guy's invincible.
There's
He'll
no way
through.
To kill him.
He'll be the last man standing.
Right. He also... Adam Marbrand also argued for no truce with the Starks when that was being discussed, and he wanted to march on Rob. So
it's not terribly surprising that they've taken some important castles in the West, because basically most people who are capable of fighting are with Tywin in the Riverlands.
Right.
The second tier of you could hold a weapon were drawn together in Sir Stafford's army, which has just been entirely decimated, there's nobody left looking after these castles.
Right, yeah.
They are absolutely vulnerable. So, I mean, they're still castles. It's not easy to walk into them, but...
Yeah.
I mean, they're throwing potatoes at them.
It sounds a lot like Winterfell.
Oh, yes, good point. And...
Although, at least Winterfell didn't have to put together a second army full of, sweepings from the north.
They've got Sir Roderick and Ailbelly. Ailbelly's name makes him sound hefty, but not particularly handy with the sword, to be honest.
That's true. In fact, I thought it kind of funny when Bran after Jojen says, I'm sorry, there's nothing that can be done. You're gonna die, basically. And he says, I've got guards. I've got Ailbelly and Hayhead and Poxy Tim. And I was like, that's not exactly a murderer's row of intimidating names there.
Yeah. Yeah. So the boys, none of the boys know the name Sir Stafford Lannister. So Bran thinks it, and one of the Freys says it, that they don't think it matters which Lannisters they kill unless they get Tywin.
Right.
And Bran then thinks, yeah, that's what I think too.
Yeah, yeah.
But, and they're right. I mean, they're absolutely right. Beating Sir Stafford's army is not going to end this war. It's definitely helpful, but it's not going to end it.
If it had been the other way around, if he had defeated Tywin's army and Sir Stafford's was still standing, that might have been a different situation. Then that might have been, a soon end to this war, but as it is, it's not as big a deal.
But so after the meeting with Maester Luwin, Bran goes to the Reeds and he says, all right, you guys can tell the future. So tell me your new dream. And so Jojen says, it's the sea that comes. Black waves crashing against the gates. Salt water flows over the walls. They don't know what it means.
Right.
To them, it's like a tsunami, but they're hundreds of miles from the coast. They don't know what it means. Having read earlier chapters, we're acutely aware of what it means.
Right.
And in fact, Luwin and Sir Roderick Castle, both sort of figure it out themselves, because when they're talking about it, they say, well, there has been some news of the Ironborn. Well, they don't actually say it's the Ironborn, but
right. They just say Raiders or something.
And, yeah. So it's the Ironborn. It's Theon right. Greyjoy and crew. They are raiding the north, and that's the sea that's coming. I think at some point in your notes I saw a sort of like, is there a debate about what this means? I don't think
that. It's not so much a debate about what this means. I agree. It's certainly in reference to the Ironborn invading. It's more of, could the walls of the castle be a metaphor for just general invasion of the north?
Because I see.
The earlier
not actually
dream,
Winterfell, right?
Yes, yes. The earlier dream was a metaphor. It was meat being served by Luwin. It was actually news being served by Luwin. So maybe the castle walls of Winterfell is just, a reference to the Ironborn invading the north, not necessarily invading Winterfell. Because right. Even Balin expected a siege of Winterfell to take a year or more. So
yeah.
But you don't know how far off in the future he's seeing this either.
Right. Right. And actually, you could imagine if let's say it literally means Winterfell. Well, you could perhaps get Mikkon and Chael and Ailbelly to come with you and flee to the wall or something to avoid them. And the dream could be a metaphor for them leaving Winterfell,
Yes, right.
Not necessarily being drowned by it. So you're right. There's still room for interpretation. You're absolutely right.
But I was thinking about this dream. If we assume that this is the dream that Jojen told his father about, which was the catalyst.
Right. I believe there was definitely the implication that that's the case, because he said, I had this dream back home. And I didn't recognize the people in the dream. But
yes.
Now I've come here, I recognize the people.
Yes,
so,
that's right.
So he definitely, the timeline works. He had this dream at home, told his father about this dream, and now he's here.
So it just feels a little bit almost like dereliction of duty by Howland Reed to, if he believed his son enough to send, pack him up, ship him off to Winterfell with this news, maybe he might have wanted to come with him to add some authority to the claim, or if he's incapable for some whatever reason, because he never seems to leave Greywater Watch, at least send a letter vouching for what his son said, or You know, it would carry more weight than a little boy going, I had a dream that this castle is going to be drowned. So.
Yeah. Tricky, though. Maybe he also believes the Jojen. Oh, it's going to happen.
Right. There's nothing we can do about it now.
He's just phoning it in at this point. He's like, well, I'm not going there.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, maybe it's that. Maybe he's like, well, if it's going to be overrun by water, I'm just going to stay here at Greywater Watch. But at the end of Theon 2, Damphair, his Uncle Aaron, says, the waters of wrath will rise high, and the drowned god will spread its dominion over the Greenlands. So maybe that was a foreshadowing of this dream.
Yeah. So this has convinced Bran. But Jojen still makes a deal. In order to tell him this dream, he wants to hear about Bran's dreams.
Right.
Last time they tried to get the dreams out of Bran, it didn't go too well.
It did not. It ended with two treed reeds.
Right, exactly. So Bran tells them about his wolf dreams, which I think they already kind of knew about. I think Jojen had actually accused him of having these dreams where he basically was inhabiting Summer.
Right.
The crow dreams, which occasionally feature the weirwood trees talking to Bran.
Right.
And the falling dreams.
Yeah, and I wondered if maybe, you know, it was said that the greenseers of the Children of the Forest could see through trees and possibly communicate through trees. And I wondered if that was maybe someone from the future or the past trying to reach out to Bran through the dream trees, or maybe it's none of that at all. But I did notice that Mira says to him, after he says, he mentions the wolf dream, the crow's dream, and the falling dream, and Mira said, is that all? But there was no, and he says, yeah, basically, that's all. There was no mention of the golden man dream. And last time when they were out in the Godswood, and the reeds were trying to get Bran to tell them of his dreams, and he ended up having them treed by Summer, he did think about the golden man dreams. But he didn't tell them about any of the dreams. This time he tells them the dreams, but leaves that one out. So I thought that was an interesting omission.
He certainly omits it, but he does say, whenever I climbed, I knew I wasn't going to fall. And then I did. It's like, right. You know, something happened. I mean, he certainly doesn't accuse anyone, but
yes.
He does re-reference the fact that he was always a very confident climber, and then something stopped him from being.
I did notice that too. And I when he said, I knew I would never fall, but then I did. And I thought, once again, he's not admitting outwardly to this golden man pushing him dream.
Yeah. So, Jojen tells him that the wolf dreams are not dreams at all, that he is inhabiting Summer and he is a warg, and that his own folk will fear him and hate him and perhaps kill him. Although, given what Jojen knows, he should possibly reassure him. Don't worry, they won't kill you.
They won't kill you. But that's not what gets
you. By the way, I wouldn't tell this stinky guy Rink about your warg dreams.
Yeah. I didn't think about that, but you're right. Apparently Jojen didn't either.
he's just spreading more joy.
Right, yes, yeah, Mr. Sunshine there. He also says that Bran only opens his third eye when he's dreaming, and that when he's awake, it's shut tight. But he's not aware of the fact that during that feast, the harvest feast, Bran did have a waking dream during the feast when he was just sitting there, and he started to kind of fall into a summer dream, a wolf summer dream, and then was snapped out of it by someone talking to him, so...
Yeah,
it happens, I guess.
When I was writing the notes earlier, I wrote the words "dreams of summer," and I was like, "That's not going to sound like what I mean it to be," you know.
So. Right. The wolf summer, that is.
Yes. So he actually says that your soul searches for your other half, which, you know, we talked about that before. That Bran and Summer do seem to be two halves of the same soul, and the interesting question there is it just Bran? Is it just Bran because he fell? Is it all the Stark kids? I mean, right. They all got one.
Yeah. Well, you could certainly see that Jon and Ghost have a connection, but we've been in Jon's head, and we haven't heard any reference to any kind of ghost dreams that John has.
Right, but perhaps the bond is not as tight as it is for Bran. But it doesn't necessarily mean that I think you could definitely draw parallels to, for instance, Arya and Nymeria. Nymeria is the lost wolf. She's roaming the kingdoms free. Yeah. No one's in control of her. And that's sort of like how you might see...
Right? I see what you're getting Arya. At. Yeah.
Sansa's the tricky one. Because obviously Lady was killed. So how does that leave Sansa? Is she half a person?
Right.
I mean, she thinks like half a person sometimes.
She's had moments.
Yes.
But
we'll have to keep an eye on that, because it would be interesting if basically you find some aspects of her personality are missing as she grows older.
Right.
Fingers crossed, in this book.
It will be very interesting, because all the rest, their wolves are at least alive. Arya might not have Nymeria with her. This doesn't mean they can't be reunited, especially if they're two halves of the same soul, that they might find their way back to each other. That'll be we'll have to keep an eye on that.
Yeah.
But after the reeds come with their rays of sunshine and brighten Bran's day with all this talk of death and drowning, then Bran over the next few days tries to warn the various people. He tries to warn Alebelly and Septon Shale and Mickon, and it's basically just hijinks that ensue that doesn't go at all the way he hoped that it would.
I like Septon Shale's answer. He's like, "Oh, I'm a good swimmer. Don't worry about me."
Right. Yeah. I don't think it'll be drowning. I could certainly die, but I don't think it'll be from drowning. But then Roderick shows up. I mean, there's not a whole lot to go into about him trying to tell the three. I mean, Alebelly.
It was a scintilla of comic relief in an otherwise utterly depressing chapter.
Right. Yes. Alebelly's a little bit funny. He actually goes and talks to Jojen, and I thought, shouldn't Jojen have mentioned that not to take the dreams as literal interpretations? He said that to Bran.
Right.
Either Alebelly's not smart enough to figure out what that means, or Jojen was just letting him go with it. He's like, you're going to drown.
Okay, I get it. I don't take the dreams literally. I'm still not having a bath, but...
Yeah. We'll be right back.
Hello, friends. Are you ready to make some unforgettable memories? Well, if so, consider the Marriott Bonvoy program. Discover the perfect destination for your summer getaway and unlock exclusive deals on luxurious accommodations. With our affiliate partnership, you'll enjoy unbeatable savings and a seamless booking experience. Don't let summer slip away. Visit Marriott Bonvoy today and make this vacation season one for the books. Use our Ghosts of Harrenhal affiliate page to check it all out and buy Bonvoy points or give some as a gift. The link to our page is in the show notes. So anyway, Roderick eventually shows up, and he's got a prisoner with him named Reek, or at least that's the nickname. Hayhead said he doesn't know what his real name is, but they call him Reek. And Hayhead also says that Reek helped the Bolton Bastard kill Lady Hornwood. So we actually heard about him from Lady Hornwood when she came for the feast. She mentioned that he's the Bolton Bastard's servant, and she said he's almost as cruel as the Bolton Bastard, and that he never bathes, and that he and the Bolton... It's very complicated to continually call this character
Let's just call him Bolton. It's not Roose. Let's just call him Bolton, right? Yeah,
even though he's a Snow, we're going to call him Bolton just for...
We're going to call him Bolton.
Yeah.
We're legitimizing him just for shorthand. Just right. So we can stop saying bastard all the time.
Yeah, I know. So he and Bolton hunt together, and not just for deer. That's what Lady Hornwood said about him. So
yeah. And last Bran chapter, we learned that Bolton had taken Lady Hornwood captive on the way home from the feast. But now we discover that good news for the world, this Bolton character has been killed. He was found doing something horrible. Bran's not sure what it was, but he imagines it was something without clothes to someone.
Yeah, so certainly seems sexual in nature.
Yes, and certainly... within character for the Bolton chapter.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit confusing. It's not very clear here, but last chapter, we were told that Wyman Manderly took control of the Hornwood Castle after the Bolton Bastard took Donella captive. So when Sir Roderick finds Donella Hornwood dead in a room, it's not likely in Hornwood Castle.
Correct.
So I don't know if he has stormed the Dreadfort or if they're in some third location that...
I suspect they're somewhere in between. I suspect he didn't go all the way to the Dreadfort.
Yeah.
That would be my guess.
At first, in my head, I thought it was in Hornwood Castle. And then I thought, wait a second, it can't be in Hornwood Castle because Wyman Manderly's taken it.
My bet would be that the Bolton character took her to the nearest Septon and got it all squared away as quickly as possible, you know?
Right, yes. Yeah. So Roderick's concern is that that the Bolton bastard, the Bolton locked up the heir to being the Hornwood lands, and he's hoping that Roose will stand down. We mentioned this in the summary.
Right, because the fear being that the now dead Bolton child was the heir. And because of his death, it goes up the chain back to his father, Roose.
Yes, right, exactly.
But you got to say, and actually, I almost commented on this when you said it in the summary. You said that he did all the necessary things. I was like, there was consent missing. You'd hope that would be part of it.
And Lewin mentions that vows taken at sword point don't count. And Roderick's response is, Roose Bolton might not agree with this much land at stake.
Right. And especially with all of the participants dead. Obviously, it's clear to us that Lady Hornwood was coerced into doing it.
Right.
But she's dead. The guy she married is dead. There's no one left to vouch for
him. Let's call him the Bolton boy. He's not a Bolton, though.
He's not a Bolton.
Right. That's why it's so complicated. That's why Rick is being kept alive.
The kicker is we both know his first name, but the book refuses to say it, so we can't say it yet.
There's multiple times we've had to edit out me saying his first name. So this is the reason why Rick is being kept alive by Sir Roderick, is because he's witness.
As the last witness to the shenanigans.
Yes, which means they must have killed the Septon as well, the Septon that married them.
Right.
I'm guessing. But, so, Roderick found Donella locked in a room, dead, having eaten her fingers off. And he found Bolton men all over the Hornwood lands. Roderick's a pretty reliable source, especially to Rob. You'd think just his eyewitness of what he has seen. I found Donella Hornwood dead, locked in a room. She had to eat her hands before she starved to death, and the Bolton men were all over the Hornwood lands. And Rob would say, okay, I'm removing any claim to the... the Boltons
you
have
don't
to
need
these
the
lands.
Stinky guy who might lie.
Right. What's the point of keeping him around? That's what all that meant. What's the point of keeping Reek around?
that is a good point, actually.
So the Manderlys are very involved in this dispute between the Boltons and the Hornwood lands. And it's not just because they are neighbors. It's also because Donella was a Manderly before she married into the Hornwood family.
Right.
So that's another reason why Wyman Manderly is so heavily involved here.
So Bran is 9, I believe, still.
Yeah, I think he's turned 9 recently, yeah.
Right, 9. Bran, I think, often sort of like contends with, I need to be the Prince of Winterfell. I am the Stark in Winterfell, and I need to keep appearances up.
Right.
But he's a 9-year-old child who believes in things.
Yeah.
Particularly because of his situation. His imagination is sort of, you know, his consolation and what he's got.
Right.
So he wants to tell Lewin and Roderick about things that he hears that are fantastical and magical. But he also has a feeling inside him that they're going to laugh in his face, you know, that they're going to... Yep. But he girds his loins and tells them of Jojen's dream. And actually, Roderick tries to calm him down, as you would. It's a child who's afraid of a dream. You would try to calm him down. But Lewin, I think somewhat kindly, but also actually interpreting the dream, mentions that the Stony Shore is being raided.
Right. Yes. Yeah, I could definitely see that tug of war there for young Bran. On one hand, he believes that Jojen is telling that Jojen can see the future in his dreams. But on the other hand, he knows, I'm the Prince of Winterfell. This is going to sound like I'm crazy.
Right. It's going to sound like I'm an idiot child.
So,
I'm a man grown.
Right, yeah. But we know that this is Theon Damphair and Dagmar Cleftjaw. They were given 8 ships just to harry the coast as a diversion. And that the phase 2 is Asha landing on the flats north of Deepwood Mott, which is the Glover's castle, with 30 ships. And their plan is to take Deepwood Mott and hopefully catch them unaware that before they get a chance to properly man a defense.
Right, and that's not the end of the plan, right?
No, that's just phase two.
Yeah, it's phase two. Phase three is they expect a response from Winterfell. They expect Winterfell to do very much what the Westerland cities did and empty out to deal with this threat. And meanwhile, Victarion will meet little resistance on his way to take Moat Cailin. And that's the key, because ownership of Moat Cailin prevents Robb's army from coming back north, because Moat Cailin is impregnable.
Yep. That's the plan. Phase one is off and running.
Yeah, phase one is clearly off and running.
But
And is definitely Jojen's dream.
Yes, it certainly fits. But no need to worry, because Leobald Tallheart sent his nephew Benfred to deal with the raiders. And you may remember Benfred. He's the one who has the group called the Wild Hares, which were inspired by Robb.
I knew there was a rabbit here somewhere. Yes. I couldn't remember everything, but I knew there was a rabbit involved.
They were inspired by the young king of the north. And so Benfred and his buddies ride around looking for glory, and they refer to themselves as the young wolves because they're all young like Robb. They're all teens. But Leobald said they're more like hares. So now they ride around with rabbit hides on their spears and call themselves the Wild Hares. So he sent them to go deal with Theon and his 8 ships. So I'm sure Benfred and his Wild Hares will be up to the challenge. Now, Leobald Tallheart, he's actually the younger brother of Helmund Tallheart, who's at the Twins to make sure the Walder isn't up to any funny business. He's the keep Walder honest guy.
Right. And we met Leobald at the Harvest Feast with everybody else, right?
Yes.
He was one of the people who met Bran, yeah.
Yes, he's the acting lord of Torrhen Square. And it's actually one of the closer northern houses to Moat Cailin. So distracting them with raiding along the Stony Shore is smart, because Victarion is supposed to get to Moat Cailin without too much trouble, because they're going to draw the attention away with Theon and his folks.
Right.
We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by Audible. To get a free audiobook, or 2 if you're an Amazon Prime member, go to our exclusive URL, audibletrial.com/ghostsharrenhal. You can find the link in our show notes.
So Roderick reckons that the raiders and Bolton's child won't dare do these things if the main force of the north wasn't 1,000 leagues away. And he's right.
Yep. It's the exact concern we had when Robb took near all capable fighting men south with him.
Yeah. And then sent a Greyjoy to be his ambassador to the Greyjoys.
Right. Sent the captive less Greyjoy to be his envoy. Yeah. And the cat tried to tell him that is a terrible idea. But you know teenage boys, they know it all. So
because Alebelly was referenced as one of the people who drowns, Roderick agrees that he won't take him with him when he goes to deal with the raiders. Bran and Mira hope that this might solve things, but Jojen is adamant that Green's dreams can't be changed. But at the same time, they're open to interpretation. The phrase did not eat secondary meat. They got bad news.
Right.
So it doesn't necessarily mean literally what it says. So
yes.
Chin up.
Yeah, Emira gets angry about this and about him, Jojen, saying, nope, Grim Dreams can't be changed. And this is the second time she's gotten upset about him saying basically that Grim Dreams always come true. And you and I have theorized that it's possibly stemming from him also saying frequently, this is not the day I die. So, right. You know, it's very possible he has dreamed his death, told Mira about it, and she is insistent that, no, they don't always need to come true.
Right, right. I mean, unless he told her, I'll be like 100 years old. And
right.
People will be fanning me and feeding me grapes.
Like we've said before, Mira must be with him, and they must have all their arms and legs, because every time Summer almost attacks them, he's like, yeah, no worries. This is not the day.
So. That's right.
But then she gets upset and says, she gets upset in Jojen and says, you'd probably jump in the whale if you were Elbelly. He should fight, and Bran should too. And Bran's like, what?
Hang on.
Me?
As I recall it, I wasn't getting drowned. So
right.
I'm going to stay put. So Jojen then tells Bran the dream of Bran's death. Jojen has seen Bran and Rickon dead at the feet of Reek, this new prisoner. And Reek is peeling their faces off. Which is a very Bolton thing to do, by the way.
It is a very Bolton thing to do. Yeah. He's yeah. not a Bolton, Reek, but no. He's spent a lot of time at the Dreadfort, so he must have picked up some...
tips?
Yes, exactly.
So you don't think you should tell a 9-year-old this story?
I don't think you should tell a 9-year-old this. Not. I don't think you should tell a 9-year-old any of this, especially if it can't be changed. But
how old was your precious daughter when you let her watch Coraline?
Younger than 9, I would think, probably.
Get off your high horse there. I know how damaged she was.
That's nothing compared to Stacy letting Ethan watch Signs at like 5. Oh, and he had a second story bedroom which looks out onto rooftops, and you know that scene in Signs where he looks out the window and sees an alien on the roof of the barn, and then, you know, catches out of the corner of his eye and looks back and it's gone. All Ethan could see out his windows, little 5-year-old Ethan, was aliens on rooftops. So maybe
did,
I should
Stacey compound it by
advice.
Getting a little inflatable alien that she would put up there?
Right. Yeah, she had it on a pulley system.
One thing I will say, though. So again, the dreams don't come true literally as they are necessarily. Is there right. any kind of interpretation where this is not Reek making face bacon out of Bran and Rickon? I mean, it feels pretty much nailed down. But then I did think about, you know, your face is your identity. And perhaps he's stealing their identity in some way.
Oh, yes. That could be. That's a good interpretation.
I mean, maybe he's just supplanting them or something as Lords of Winterfell. But I don't know. I mean, just I'm clutching at straws here. I'm hoping Jojen's wrong.
Yes, right. No. Of course, the dreams, he admits they can be tough to interpret because they're not always literal. So, yeah, this doesn't necessarily mean that... that the boys will be dead with their faces peeled off. In fact, because of that fact, I probably wouldn't have mentioned it to the 9-year-old.
Yeah. The tricky part about it is I'm trying to interpret the faces being peeled off as something, but it does start with dead at his feet.
Right, yeah.
That I can't really get around, you know.
Yeah. So Bran says, hey, I'll just go to Greywater Watch or somewhere else. And Jojen says, no, it won't matter. And then she makes a, you know, kind of a solid point. Like, why, Mira, that is, makes a fairly solid point. She says, why would you be sent Green Dreams if you can't do anything about them? And, you know, that's a pretty solid point. And he admits, I don't know why I have these Green Dreams, but they seem to come true exactly as I dream them, so.
Okay, I have a counterpoint to that. I take the point that you're making, and you and Mira are the same. What's the point of a prophetic dream if it can be changed? I mean,
yeah, you're right.
It's like it's just a dream, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's only because they come true that they're prophecies. You know, if they were
right, Yeah, that's a solid point. I mean, if you could change them, then they wouldn't have been seeing the future.
Right.
They would be like a forewarning. It'd be like if Ebenezer Scrooge was like, "Oh no, I've seen this terrible future. What can I do to change about it?" And the ghost of the future is like, "Oh, nothing. This is pretty set in stone.
we're just showing you what's to come."
Right. Yeah.
But I mean, for most of us, the dreams are not guaranteed to be prophetic. And so if I dreamt of like being a very hungry old man begging on the street, I might squirrel away some more savings for that eventuality. You know, you can try to address those dreams. But
right.
Jojen says, "I'm batting 1,000. What am I supposed to do here? You know, I got to tell you.
I could try and soften the blow, but instead I'm just going to tell you in excruciating detail how you'll die and what'll happen to your body afterward.
Maybe dead at his feet with your face being peeled off was the softened blow.
Maybe.
The dream was way worse than this, but the salient points were dead, face peeled off.
Right. Now, of course, earlier, last Bran chapter, he had told Bran, "You should leave Winterfell sooner rather than later." So, has he had this dream more recently then, I guess? Because
I did. I wondered that same thing. I think that one's hard for us to speculate on. But what I imagine is that Jojen has had a dream of Bran outside of Winterfell. That's what I feel like. And I feel like probably he's had a dream of Bran doing something outside Winterfell. And he's had the dream of the sea coming to Winterfell. And I think he's probably thinking, should probably make sure that the Bran outside of Winterfell dream is in place and happening before the sea coming to Winterfell happens. Otherwise, my dreams might not all come true.
Make a whole lot of sense, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I just wonder why change his tune? You need to get out of Winterfell. And then it's like, it doesn't matter if you get out of Winterfell or not. This is still happening.
Exactly, yeah. I watched a movie last night called Palm Springs.
I've heard of it. I've not watched it.
Yeah, it's a redoing of Groundhog Day.
Oh, yes, right. Yeah.
And basically, he's been there. He's been stuck in the same day for so long that he now just does whatever he wants. You know, he's
right.
Just like, he sort of like, he drinks from the first moment of the day and sort of, sometimes he murders people.
Okay.
But the day just resets, so he just gets away with it all, you know.
Right,
so
yeah.
And this is how Jojen should be. It's like, I know what's going to happen. I'm not going to bother giving you people advice.
Yeah.
Why should I worry you?
Yeah, you could definitely see how this would weigh on a kid, or an adult, but especially a kid, knowing these things. And then having to tell 9-year-olds about their face being flayed off.
Maybe Jojen takes a malicious delight out of this.
Maybe.
All right, you got some background for us?
Little bit. When Bran asks Osha if she knows the way back north of the wall, she says, yeah, it's easy. You just look for the ice dragon and follow the blue star in the rider's eye. I thought it might have been easier for her to just say, just follow the King's Road. But, you know, this works too, I guess.
Well, just go north.
Right, yes. So the ice dragon is obviously a constellation, but it's based off of a...
Oh, that makes more sense than what I was thinking.
Yeah. It's actually based off of a mythical dragons made of ice who are said to have lived along the Shivering Sea, which is the sea north of Essos, and in the White Waste. Now, the White Waste, we haven't talked about a whole lot. It's a mostly uncharted area north of the Shivering Sea that is a land of ice and snow. And the ice dragons are said to have been significantly larger than dragons of Valyria, which, if you've heard the descriptions of Beleriand, that's saying something. They're described as being made of living ice and having pale blue crystal eyes, huge translucent wings, and instead of fire, they have cold breath.
Ooh, scary. So what's a little bit interesting about that is that the constellation, the blue, is the rider's eye, not the dragon's eye. You'll notice.
Right, yes.
But also, don't you get a little bit of a sort of shiver of the White Walkers here?
I do, yeah. Blue eyes. Mm. Yeah, the
scary.
Being made of ice.
Yep. See what I did there? A shiver of...
Oh, yes, I did. Yeah, well done.
All right,
well done.
Comparison with the television show. As mentioned previously, the Reed's arrival in the show is delayed, so the dream of the sea coming to Winterfell is given to one Brandon Stark.
Oh, okay.
He voices it to Osha. She tries to reassure him the sea is hundreds of miles away, but she is obviously disquieted by the dream as much as Bran is. Uh-huh. Notably, Sir Roderick is the one person he mentions seeing drowned, nobody else.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He also asks her what they say of the three-eyed raven north of the wall, but she's evasive about that too. She says they say a lot of crazy stuff north of the wall, so she's got information there that she's not sharing too.
Okay, those two things are slightly different than in the book, because in the book, Roderick says, there's no mention of me drowning, right? Okay, good. So he is specifically not mentioned as having drowned, and she is a lot more encouraging of the things in the north that are not the norm that happened.
Right. I think the TV show version of her is similar in many ways. I mean, I think she believes in the scary things north of the wall, but I also think that she's, the TV show version of her is perhaps more perturbed by Bran than the book version. What the things that Bran's learning. And that's partly because in the book, Bran is not the one having that dream. That's Jojen. Right.
Yeah.
So.
Yes. I see it. Yeah.
All right. Pedantry, I couldn't find much, but I will say, and I think you made this point, immutable prophecies don't make for good books because we know what's going to happen now because it's an immutable prophecy.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. That's, they need to be kind of hard to interpret. They have a lot of different interpretations.
That's the one thing. And I think there are just about enough that we don't have to worry for Bran and Rickon's faces just yet.
Right. There's enough there.
Yeah. News and notes.
News and notes. Well, so George Martin, Robert Redford, and Graham Rowland have already signed on to executive produce a new show on AMC called Dark Winds, which is based on Tony Hillerman's Leaphorn and Chi novels. But now the show has a new cast member, Rainn Wilson, or as the Office fans know him, Dwight Schrute, has signed on to play a pious missionary on the show. And the show centers around two Navajo police officers who are working on a grisly double murder case back in the 1980s. So if you're interested in things that keep Martin from writing Winds of Winter, that's something you could.
Perhaps we should boycott them all, try to make discouraging. Right. Yeah. Kind of,
yeah. Quit encouraging him, people.
Have you read these books?
No, I haven't.
I'm guessing Leaphorn and Chi are the two Navajo police officers.
I'm with you on that, yes.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, we got a review from Mulk E. Pants. Outstanding! Great content, entertaining, and fun. Tell your friends to give this a listen. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Pants, or Ms. Pants.
Yes, and I hope others take your recommendation and tell their friends to give us a listen.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
All right, let's wrap this one up. So Jojen was right about the war news and the boys' reaction, and we also know that he's probably right about the sea coming to Winterfell.
Yeah.
It's coming to the north. Not
right,
necessarily
that's
to Winterfell.
What I was going to say is, does that mean that the folks in Winterfell, literally in Winterfell, are in trouble? Or is there a less literal interpretation here and it's just the invasion of the north? And maybe Winterfell will hold out for a year plus for a siege from the Ironborn.
The one thing I will say, though, is that Jojen seems pretty adamant that the people he saw dead will die.
He did.
You know, it's not like he's like, oh, they were just, you know, northerners. It was like, it was that guy, and that guy.
Right. He was
and
pretty specific.
He was not leaving it like they were representative of the coming ills. It was like, no, they're going to be dead.
Yes, that's true. That's very literal.
Yeah. At least Jojen's being literal about it.
Right.
So let's hope that the Bran and Rickon being dead at Reek's feet, having their faces peeled off, is not so literal.
Yes. Jojen's still
recovering from
his
Ned's death. I can't be coping with Bran and Rickon.
Right, I know, seriously. Jojen and all his sunshine that he brings to conversations seems to believe that it does mean that the boys will die.
I've just actually had a thought. Bran's presence in that dream is weird. But Rickon, maybe it's a dream about the fact that Rickon is so faceless that no one remembers him.
Remembers him, right.
That's what's going on here.
I'm surprised that Jojen didn't say, it was you and...
some other kid.
There was someone else with you.
Once his face was peeled off, I still couldn't tell him.
Right. Well, but the Ironborn have started Operation Take the North.
That's a great name for it. Yeah. Although if plans fall into the other team's hands, they'll know.
Right. There might be a little bit too literal again here. Yeah, the first wave is the raiding of the Stony Shore. So we know that next is Asha coming to take a Deepwood Mott. So I guess we'll have to see if that happens as well.
Yeah. And Roderick is right to think that the Raiders wouldn't be coming here if the main force was available, because the Raiders are coming because the main force told them that the North was undefended.
Yes, you're right. I hadn't thought about it that way, but that's exactly what happened.
They sent them a message. Hey, we're not home. Please come and join us.
Right. Don't go to our home, because we're not there. Come join us in the West. And poor Lady Hornwood.
Yeah, she's been a great character, actually. I remember not remembering her, but actually I've grown very fond of her on the reread. So I'm very sad that she's dead, and I will not mourn the passing of Roose Bolton's child.
Right. Yes, I agree with you entirely. And you know, it's just more chaos and distraction for Roderick, which is a kind of an added bonus for the Ironborn. They didn't even have to plan that distraction, and that was on the whole far side of the kingdom.
And it seems like these are, I mean, obviously the Manderleys and the Boltons are two of the major houses of the North. They could contribute to the defense of the western part of the realm if they weren't so busy fighting with one another.
Oh, yes, right, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure I completely share Roderick's concern that the Hornwood lands are locked in for the Boltons now. I mean, like you said, this is all coercion. If I was the king, I would certainly annul it straight off the bat.
Right. And
then who gets it? There are no Hornwoods left.
You're right. Rob's going to have to sort that out, but I'm pretty sure he's a fairly common sense kind of kid, it seems like. Young man, I should say. He's not a kid, he's the king, but
I think if I were him, I would have given it 50-50 to the Boltons and the Manderleys, but now I'm going to give it 60-40 for what the Boltons did.
Right. 10%
exactly.
Loss. 10% penalty for causing trouble. Yeah, it just seems like Rob would believe Roderick about how he found Danella, he found Danella, where he found the Boltons on the Hornwood lands.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good...
Yeah, and it's not like it's just locked in Roderick. If something happened to Roderick,
right,
this doesn't go away. He's told Lewin, he's told Bran, everybody knows.
Yeah, and his men were there and witnessed these things, so there's plenty of evidence. So.
Yeah. And Roderick didn't seem to completely discount the Green Dreams. He and Lewin were both listening to what Bran said. So perhaps Bran should tell him about the dream of Reek cutting off their faces.
Yeah, I mean...
That might encourage Reek's swift dispatch.
If I was Roderick, and I knew that he had just had the dream about the sea coming to Winterfell, and at that exact same time, the Ironborn were invading the North, just to be on the safe side, I might just off this Reek character.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to be safe.
One thing, actually, do you remember that Sir Roderick had a soft spot for Lady Danella?
He did, that's right.
Yeah. I wonder if Bolton's child's demise was a little bit retaliatory. Rather than bringing him in chains to Winterfell to face the King's justice, he was like, ooh, I'm going to get that guy.
Taking you out right now.
Exactly.
Yeah, could be. Anyway, got anything left?
No, that's good.
All right.
Why don't you take this?
Well, okay. As always, you can reach us at ghost.harrenhal@gmail.com. You can go out us and... This is why I don't take it. You can go out and follow us on Twitter, @ghostharrenhal. We're on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Discord.
And don't forget to leave us a review. If you could give us a 5-star review, we'll try to read it out on the show, and it really helps us to get the word out.
Sure does.
The higher our rating, the further up we appear in searches. So it would help us a lot. All right. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.